Adventures in Collecting is about toys, but it might not be for your children, especially if you don't like words like f**k or sh**.
Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting. Dave, we are here.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
That's, love it. Love the energy.
Yeah, I had to get it in for you, for y'all.
So if you didn't listen to our last episode, this is the first episode of year two for us. Go back and listen to that anniversary episode. We had a lot of fun with all the cool special guests that we had to call in. So thank you, everybody, for that.
Yes, but listen to this one first and then listen to that one.
Yeah, you're already here, so you might as well.
Yeah, you're here.
So, as always, when we have a guest, we're not going to bury the lead. So since 2008, Dave, the Loyal Subjects has been delivering articulated vinyl action figures covering anything from wrestling to xenomorphs and pretty much seemingly everything in between. So joining us this week on the pod is Jonathan Cathy, CEO and founder of the Loyal Subjects, to talk about their new unique line that they are just launching, called Best Action. That's BSTAXN. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey man, thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. We're so excited to have you. Dave and I are both completely jazzed for this for this new line.
Definitely one of my favorite booth stops at Toy Fair last year.
Yeah, for sure.
Or this year? I don't even know what year it is anymore.
2020, this past year.
Yeah.
Back in February, which seems like an eon ago.
It's weird. It kind of feels like yesterday and, as you're saying, aeons. It's been a trip. This year's been a trip, for sure.
Yes.
But with that said, still one of my favorite booths that I visited.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see how many different licenses you guys have. But we'll get into that as we get into our conversation here. So Jonathan, before we get into the Loyal Subjects and all of the cool shit that you're working on, we like to ask our guests first and foremost, what are you collecting? So what's filling your shelves these days? What are you collecting?
What I'm collecting is mostly emails from everybody right now. Now, honestly, I'm more focused on building stuff, but I will be filling our shelves or my shelves with probably these Kiss figures that we're making. Those are pretty cool. Digging the Lord of the Rings. I like our stuff, man. I know it sounds like bias, essentially saying, you're the mom saying that their kid's the most greatest thing on earth. I'm kind of pulling that right now, but it's genuine, man. I really do love everything we make. So, I like that stuff in and around me. And I got a lot of it because we got a, 4,000 square foot office with giant showroom. So we got a lot of that stuff hanging out.
Yeah, we both, so it's no surprise to people who've listened to the show before, but Dave and I are huge Kiss fans. Like,
yes.
huge Kiss fans.
Nice, man.
My daughter, who will be five by the time this episode airs, I took her to her first concert when she was just turning four, and it was Kiss at Madison Square Garden. That was
the day before my birthday last year.
Yeah, that was my first concert that Dave brought me to when I was younger. So,
they Kiss, were my first concert too when they for their reunion tour.
Oh, that's rad! Right on, man.
So Kiss is a big part of our lives. So we're very excited to see Gene Simmons in that first wave of these figures.
I kid you not. So one of my best friends when I was in my 20s, I kind of came from the music scene here in LA. I played drums in a lot of bands and sort of slugged it out in all the clubs from Roxy, Whiskey, Viper Room, Troubadour, basically regular rock and roll club rats at all these places in my early 20s. But my best buddy at the time, his band, I don't know if they, maybe they played a couple shows with him or something. I don't know what it was, but he got some, like, you know, backstage passes, the whole thing, to Kiss when they first got back together, and they were playing like Anaheim or something. It was like, you know, Angel Stadium, something like that. And funny enough, he was like, yeah, you know, we got this limo, we're cruising down there, it's all access. I think it was like Halloween or something. And they're like, hey, do you want to go? And I think Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray was with them. Like, it was kind of, you know, it was definitely a 90s thing, right? So I shined it. I didn't go. But apparently it was like, you know, with all these guys, you know, rock dudes at the time, you know, they're like, yeah, we totally hung out with them and it was cool. And I shined it. For some reason, I didn't want to go.
So
there you go. You know, to be jaded in your 20s, you know, being around Hollywood, it's like, it's so funny.
So funny side story about that. I think that was when I think they aired that because it was Halloween. Uh-huh. Like, I think it was on TV or something like that. So that year for like high school, for our like Halloween basically dance and any party I went to, I went dressed up as like as Gene.
That is cool, man. And what, that was like 96, right? I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like 90. Whenever Psycho Circus, I think, was the Halloween show.
Yeah. That was it. That was the tour. So there you go. You know, I could have hung out with those guys. Obviously, I've seen Gene several times at Comic-Con. I think he once got kind of fresh with one of my girlfriends at Comic-Con, like a long time ago. But it was cool. I mean, I'm stoked to be doing it. And obviously, we're big Kiss fans because, you know, pop culture, comic books, rock and roll, kind of all colliding. That's Kiss in a nutshell, right?
Totally. I mean, yeah, for sure. Their history, they are very much so entwined in the DNA of all of those things, which actually leads us to our next question. So, you know, you have a background in music, and you know, you're very deeply ingrained in pop culture. How did you flip all of that into going into the toy industry?
Yeah, no, it's a trip. I'm definitely not a toy industry insider. You know, it's, you know, I'm a bit different than some of the companies that sort of pop up or have, you know, really done really well, like Jazzwares and, you know, Wicked Cool or some of these other guys who I think, well, Jazzwares, it's, I don't think they were from the toy industry, but I believe they were lawyers that had started a toy company. I think Wicked Cool is from the toy industry. I think they're from Jax. And you see a lot of that in this industry. You know, and I'm only saying not as... is more of a contrast, you know, that I was truly an outsider. You know, I knew nothing about any of this. And I just had a creative streak where I could paint, draw, write characters, you know, write stories, play music. Anything that's color, shape, sounds is like a first language to me. And as I was kind of pulling away from drums, and obviously it's hard making a buck as a drummer. Even if you're a big drummer, I know guys that play in big bands that, you know, squeak by essentially. So it's a tough gig. And I thought creating things, actually, when I first started, it wasn't licensing. I was creating things. I was just making up characters, and I was stupid enough to make them in China and, you know, sell them to Urban Outfitters and Tower Records and things like that back in the day. But I thought it would be a good palette, just a good medium to share my creativity with and tell story through. And that was, and kind of, you know, I kind of figured it out on my own. I flew to China and met a manufacturer. I mean, this is like 2000. This is a long time ago, right? So when I first started this, not the little subjects, but first started in this industry. And then I found it enjoyable, you know, as far as, you know, sharing my creative palette and, you know, how I saw play and toy and all these really kind of cool things, what I thought would make good experiences. And you know, voila, 20 years later, I'm here. I started the Loyal Subjects 11 years ago. And, you know, I think it served us pretty well. I think people connect to our creative ideas. They're certainly genuine, you know, and we like to tell story in a very genuine way. And that's close to, you know, indigenous to the IP that we're essentially been granted rights to sort of be guardians of and champion. And I think that has been satisfying for me, to be honest with you.
Now, you just mentioned IPs. I mean, we've seen WWE, we've seen Ghost, we've seen Fox Animation, we've seen so many different IPs come from Loyal Subjects. How do you go about selecting those?
You know, it's everybody's got a different process. Well, you know, a lot of the guys in the industry are very data driven, so it's all about analytics. They're looking at, okay, what's top three game, what's top three kids, what's top, you know, top three preschool, what's top three girls, what's top three pop culture. You know, most of the fight in the industry is for that. You know, it's like you got the Big Ten kind of whacking each other, trying to carve out those big pig outs for hopefully a year or two. And then if they get a home run, they get, you know, 5-10 year stretch on something that, you know, drives millions and millions of dollars business. So our approach is a little bit different. It's probably extremely unintuitive for the rest of the industry. Again, like I said, I'm sort of an outsider, so I approach the industry a little bit different. But for us, it's what do we like? Really, like, you know, what can we get behind? What can we dedicate, you know, a certain amount of time and effort, resources and capital to that we will actually enjoy and enjoy telling the story that we think the character's rich and there's a history there and they would make good toys. I mean, essentially it's that. It's like, what are characters that make good toys? You know, where are characters that people relate to and that you could tell a story through and have great designs? And, you know, it's not so superficial that there's a sort of a canon, you know, a Bible behind them. They sort of exist in a world. And when people that are fans of it come and interact with those characters, that they feel connected to those characters, they feel connected to the stories. So that's kind of it. You know, it's with anything, it's like a book you pick up, you know, part of it is you're connected to that story. You start investing in those characters. So, or people that you like to talk to, or, you know, the friends that you make. I mean, for me, it's very similar. What we're going to make is, you know, what's going to be a good experience in that point in time and what would be enjoyable and, you know, what we can really put our hearts and souls behind.
Now, do you find that, you know, when it comes to, you know, making these deals and selecting, you know, these IPs to, you know, to partner with, do you find that you're passion for maybe some more of the niche or the you know, like you said, less conventional brands or IPs, does that make those conversations easier to have, like as a selling point to, you know, the stakeholders?
I don't think so. You know, it's with anything in business, I mean, licensing a large part, it's, you know, it's different parts, I guess. You know, one part's transactional. It's like, how much money are we going to make? You know, so maybe the licensors approach, they have a bottom line, they have a target, they need to, you know, have X amount of partners. For these 2 years, they're going to make, you know, the consumer products group is going to make X. So there's that approach, just like real sort of like brass tacks, dollars and cents, business stuff. And then there was a guy like me that it comes in, well, has to approach it with like, hey, we, you know, we have some serious business for you and we think it's significant, or we think we could bring value because, you know, we could bring either an audience that isn't cued into you right now, or we can sort of put our spin, the little subject spin on the property and bring in, you know, hip collectors, or, you know, so we're kind of maybe an angel to some of these licensors, and some of them were, you know, decent business slug. And but I do kind of approach things with, like, you know, the emotions on the sleeve, which is fairly atypical in this industry. Like, you know, most of it is fairly transactional. So I don't know. Maybe I do. Maybe it is a breath of fresh air for some of these guys, you know, because I am certainly very unorthodox. And if you're, you know, comparing CEOs across the board of, you know, who these guys that are at Walmart, and you look at, you know, me and the rest of the gang, and, you know, it's like that Sesame Street thing. It's like one doesn't look like the other for sure. I'm a surfer skater from punker from, you know, Laguna Beach, California. And, you know, that will always be part of my being, you know. Again, I wasn't a businessman. I didn't go to business school. I went to art school. So, you know, I'm an artist that ended up owning a business, you know, instead of a business person that could build a business and then bring, you know, creatives in to help create things. You know, I was already the creative, and then I had to learn the business part.
So you mentioned briefly, you know, that special loyal subjects kind of spin and treatment. If there was one franchise that you could have, like if you were given sky's the limit, there's one franchise that you can work with, who would it be?
I don't know. You know, I sometimes, and maybe this is sort of narcissistic, but a lot of times I want to tell our own stories. I mean, we're writers and creators and artists ourselves. So there's part of me that's like, screw it. You know, so there needs to be a new story out there sometimes. You know, it's like, we don't have to always be sort of codependent on, you know, these stories that have been told for decades. Maybe there's a new story to be told. Maybe that story comes from us. Maybe that character development comes from us. So I actually think we have as much to offer as some of the historic IP that, you know, has definitely tugged the heartstrings and, you know, wowed the imaginations and minds for generations. I think we can contribute to that a bit. But, you know, as far as any of it, you know, I loved Spider-Man as a kid, you know, and I didn't really come from comic books. Like, you know, I was kind of reading more like James and the Giant Peach, not Marvel, you know what I mean? So I was, you know, my mother, she was a director at a museum. And so a lot of it, I was coming from like a fine art angle and bring into pop culture. So my influences are a little bit different sometimes, but I loved the Spider-Man TV show when I was a kid, not necessarily the cartoon. I liked the cartoon too. I thought that was cool. Like in the '80s or late '70s, but I liked that early '80s TV show. I thought that was awesome, man. You know, I like the Incredible Hulk. My dad used to call him the Green Weenie. He wouldn't even call him the Incredible Hulk. He was just the Green Weenie. That's what he would call him. So I thought that was cool. You know, the Lou Ferrigno stuff. I actually was more hip to the superheroes through television, not through the comic books. You know, I watched the live action stuff, you know, Linda Carter and Wonder Woman, you know, that sort of Charlie's Angels sort of like transformation sound effect. That's where I kind of learned about superheroes. And then obviously Christopher Reeve and Superman. That was kind of my first exposure to Superman, was Christopher Reeves. I knew more about Star Wars, you know, because I'd seen those movies when I was pretty young.
Well, I think, going back to the idea of kind of telling a new story, I think that's super interesting, because it's been a long time since there has been one of those, like, you know, you think back to the 80s, you know, whether it's My Little Pony or He-Man or, you know, G.I. Joe or any of those characters that, you know, kind of like lit the toy world on fire. It's been a long time since there has been a new one of those, because everything is like just somebody else taking over wrestling, or somebody else, you know, producing Marvel figures or Star Wars figures, or, you know, G.I. Joes are back again. So, I mean, that's an interesting take. I would love to see companies do more kind of like original characters with a narrative.
I think there's room there. It's like you kind of got into a writer's headset and a character development. A, it's hard because it's like, you know, nobody wants to take a risk, right? So it's like, how do you get retailers on board with, like, you know, here's my new guy, Sandblast Man. All right, let's go. We're gonna sandblast some fools. You know, you know, it's the safe bets work, working with the trusted suppliers works. I mean, some of it, you just got to shake these guys up a little bit. I mean, like, hey, there's, you know, there's more to offer. It's, you know, we can't just patronize customers all the time with the same, you know, the same deadbolt, you know, being screwed into the coffin. It's like, we need, there definitely is room for things that are new, you know? And I think heroes will change a little bit. Like, let's say we're walking, you know, we're entering in sort of new phase of technology, you know, or changes in the world, changes in the environment. I think there's room for new heroes and new stories and new sort of, you know, archetypes, you know, that aren't, you know, over sexualized or over masculine. I think there's a lot of room for new stuff, you know. I would definitely, I was talking to my team the other day about it. I was just saying, yeah, we really got to start, you know, making up more of our own stuff.
Now it looks like there's that kind of narrative going into the best action line, as far as kind of getting all of these different, I guess, groups or different IP into that 5-inch world. How did that best action line come to be?
Well, it's just a continuation of Action Vinyl. So Action Vinyl is just the 3-inch stylized version that we have. And what that was, and probably, you know, we actually expanded those universes a little bit more. So it's like we had a He-Man offering, you know, we had a bunch of He-Man characters or Power Rangers. There's a bunch of Power Ranger characters. So we're thinking about, well, what if we limit that and bring in the action figures and then, you know, build something powerful that people tell story through an action figure where it makes sense that, you know, you have, you know, Naruto jamming with Gene Simmons. What does that world look like? And so we wanted to make sort of a democratic world with like these walls broken down, these rules broken down, and make it fun for toy collecting. You know, essentially the ultimate total action figure collection, because we're touching so many bases. We have so many different, there's so much variety and there's so many different characters to choose from. And as you go, you know, as you were a kid and you're in the backyard, you know, kind of playing, role-playing through these action figures, we kind of want to get people back into that using their imaginations and breaking down stereotypes and rules and, you know, borders on worlds. And we kind of were doing that with Action Vinyls and thought that would be cool to introduce to action figures, you know. So again, it wasn't so stale. Yeah, it's just, it's not like typical stuff. Oh, are you, you know, you're going to get a build a Hulk and then you get these 5 to 7 figures every, you know, and not to say that that's pretty epic. It's rad. I'm just saying it's, you know, there's so many action figure providers that do this, right? So it's like, what can we bring that's different? And, you know, what we brought was a uniform scale. We thought it was a better scale because you get more on shelf. It wasn't as clunky. It was kind of more nimble to collect, and the price is excellent. So, and then we can run through more IP. So it's not like we're doing 10 Naruto characters. We're, you know, we have a couple that we're starting with. And, you know, so the collector has more choice. They have more variety. And then hopefully that ends up to, you know, being able to play and having fun and role playing and telling story. So that was the concept behind it.
Well, I think so when these were first announced, when we saw, you know, going back to going back to Toy Fair, when we saw this line initially, we saw that you know, that the first two figures we saw were the Cowboy Bebop figures. And initially seeing the two of those, we were like, oh, this is gonna be a really cool Cowboy Bebop line. And then as more information came out, and then you guys had it, you know, we were talking prior to this. You described it as like, think the Super Smash Brothers, but for action figures. My head nearly almost like fell off my shoulders, because it is such an absolute flip on the way that every other toy line is being created, where it's like, you know, McFarlane Toys just announced, you know, their new, you know, Batman wave, and like people are already in the comment sections, you could see like, oh, is Damian Wayne going to be, you know, short enough to scale with Batman? And it's like, you know, people are getting out rulers to make sure that their figures, you know, look appropriate next to each other on the shelf. And then conversely, you guys have a line where it's like, listen, you know, we know the Elric brothers, you know, there's a height discrepancy there, but they're all 5-inch figures and they're supposed to play in the same world and swap parts. So that's not what this is about.
Totally. We think toy, you know, with toy collectors is the older toy collectors. They create too many rules. You know, there's the whole idea was to suspend rules. That was the whole idea, you know, like when you're kids, like kids don't sit around and, I mean, you give them a 5-inch Hulk and a 5-inch Spider-Man, and they're pleased as punch, right?
Yep.
They don't care. They don't care. It's more about play and imagination and breaking down those rules. And we thought that that's a much more fun exercise than just, you know, spoon feeding, you know, a sort of a, kind of what everybody else is doing, you know, what everybody's been doing for years. And unfortunately, you know, people are applying too many rules to it. I think it's without rules. I think it's more fun, you know? And as you're saying, it's like, yeah, we know Alphonse Elric is a giant, you know, night beast, and his brother is not, but that's not the point. I wanted Alphonse Elric to jam with Gene Simmons. That to me was like, that's cool, but not like, not tower over Gene Simmons, like relate to Gene Simmons. You know?
I like how it's funny, because like you basically have Gene Simmons at the center of this toy line, where it's or, you know, even if you're less of a Kiss guy, more of a Guns N' Roses guy or an AC/DC guy, you have Angus or Slash, right? But yeah. It's like, how cool would it be if Napoleon Dynamite was dancing next to Slash, you know?
I mean, Angus Young he's 5'4". I mean, next yeah. to June, he looks like, you know, like how Shaquille O'Neal looks next to Spud Webb. You know what I mean? But that's not what we're going for. You know, we want everybody kind of in the equal playing field. The only, we kind of treat Gremlins a little bit different, because what goes high goes out, you know?
Yeah.
So, but Gremlins is one of these things where we just kind of look onto its own. We have the action models that are 3-inch. If you really want those to blend in the world, you could do that. But, you know, for the best action, they just happen to be kind of giant teddy bears and a monster, because A, if they're going to be 5 inches, Gizmo's fat, man.
Yep.
I mean, he's basically a fat teddy bear. So we're treating that one a little bit different, just because they're the form factors. They're not humanoid. They're not really human. They're, you know, giant teddy bear and you know, a gremlin.
Monkey teddy bear.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that kind of is its own thing. But for the humans and, you know, things that are really kind of, you know, germane to, you know, being a humanoid, we wanted them to kind of be all on the same scale, the 1-15, like a true action figures or a true scale assortment, and not really being statements about worlds where, you know, all these rules apply. So we think probably 99.9% of people are going to absolutely love that and freak and see how fun that is. And, you know, you always will have the 0.1% that are going to, you know, be the rules police. And we're just like, oh, you're missing the point. It's not about the rules. It's about breaking the rules.
Absolutely. Now, are outside of, you know, action figures with, you know, swappable parts, are you considering any vehicles, any kind of play sets, anything to kind of go with them to build this world?
It's hard, you know, play sets are hard, and why they're hard, you know, I get there's a couple of collectible companies that have done some play sets that are like an exorbitant amount of money and things like that, because the tooling is just so exotic and there's just not enough volume there, right? So, you know, not enough volume, exotic costs. Obviously, it's going to be an expensive one-offs. But what happens to a brand like us who's at retail, like, you know, who's on the shelves of Walmart and Target and Walgreens and some of these places, got to understand, Walmart's not a toy store. Walmart's really a grocery store with a couple of toy shelves, right? So it's like they don't want big, bulky things there. They want, you know, more assortments. That's kind of their philosophy. So for us, it's really hard in our environment to do that, because we're asking the store to dedicate a lot of space for it. And, you know, with with probably a slower turn and probably, less revenue per square inch kind of thing. So I think it's really hard to do that at retail right now. When Toys R Us was around, it was awesome because it was just a giant laboratory and they had huge stuff like, you know, oh, cool. Look at that. It's a 30-foot big wheel. Of course. You know, now you look at Walmart and you're like, man, they're lucky you could even get a tiny Huffy up on a bike rack.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard in our environment. We do some D2C business. It's not the core of our business. The core of our business is really kind of at retail, wholesale to retail. So I'm not counting it out. It's if that enthusiasm is there, if that customer is there, and if the retailer can find the space for it, I mean, obviously we'll make it.
So Jonathan, we posted a message on a story up on our Instagram today, and we asked our followers if they had any questions for you and for the Loyal Subjects, specifically about the Best Action line. Do you mind if I ask you a couple of those?
No, go for it. I don't know if I have any answers, but I'll try.
So the first one, I actually got this question twice, is there's a lot of excitement that there is a character from Big Trouble in Little China, in Wave 1. Are there plans to include more characters from that film in future waves?
Yeah. So, I mean, it works twofold. You guys go buy it. Guess what? The buyer is going to want to put more up there. So yeah, this is a group cooperation thing. You know, part of it is, hey, here's our licenses. Here's the characters we want to build, you know, and then the buyer has a lot of influence on what ends up on shelf. So, you know, for me personally, do I want to see the rest of the Storms up there? Do I want to see Lil Pan? Do I want to see Jack Burton? You know, I'd take Egg, dude. I think he's cool.
Yeah.
I'm all down for all of them, man. I think it's cool. So, you know, even the Six Gun Shooter, I know he's on our Facebook group. He's a cool dude. Gerald Okamura. He was in the movie. And he converses with us a lot of times. And, you know, he wants us to get a figure made of him. So, you know, there's only one way to make that happen is that fans go and ravage the pegs, and then, you know, the buyer's gonna come to us and say how much, you know, Big Trouble could we get. But we have Lightning in the assortment, and he's really badass. I mean, he's cool. And we hopefully, if that does really well, we'll probably go to Lopan or another Storm, most likely, and kind of work our way around it a bit.
Cool.
I mean, I'm on board with that regardless.
Same.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is funny. I went to college with April Hong. James Hong's daughter, you know, Lopan. And she was in a bunch of classes with me, and I used to bug her all the time. It's like, oh yeah, I love it. Your dad's awesome. I love that movie. So there was something going on in school, and he showed up. I don't know if we had like some presentation or something, but he showed up, and apparently April had told her that, you know, this guy that's in a class with her and that, you know, that she's friends with really, really loves himself some Lopan. he showed up to school, to college. I went to Cal State Northridge, and he tapped me on the shoulder. He handed me an autographed photo. It says, "You are not put on this earth to get it, Jonathan." I was like, that is cool, man. That was so dope.
Amazing.
That rules.
You know, now he's actually there, you know, there's he's got so much love in Hollywood. Everybody's lobbying for him to get a star in the Walk of Fame. I think he's gonna get it.
That would be well deserved for sure.
Oh yeah, he's like, you know, one of the best character actors out there, from Seinfeld, the Seinfeld episode to, I mean, the guy's just fantastic, right? but Lopan sort of cuts the cake for me. That was my favorite.
Yeah, that and plus, like, you know, I just, my brain is going like a million miles an hour thinking of like the cool, like figure photography you could do mixing these characters together. So it's, I'm just excited. So yes, then to answer that question, then if you want more, you heard it from Jonathan. If you want more, Big Trouble in Little China, you got to go out and buy Lightning when this line starts to hit.
I think people are going to go nuts. I mean, I think people will get it. They're going to go, this is a killer scale. It's a killer price. A ton of features. You know, it's basically like Tamashii Nation Light for $15.99. Yeah. I mean, this is, and with all the different character, the varieties and choices, it's kind of like a no-brainer. I mean, hopefully we take over everybody's action figure collections. That's, you know, that's what we want. We want the people to build these battle royales of all these different characters from all these different worlds.
So we've kind of touched on a lot of the other questions that we've been asked, but there is one that I think is just kind of more of kind of a general question. Mm-hmm. We have a question about the loyal subjects in general. Why does it tend to be very difficult to find the loyal subject products on shelves?
I don't know. You know, I've heard this about our distribution. People are like, oh, your distribution sucks. You can't find anything. It's like, I don't know, man. We shipped 6 million pieces and sold 6 million pieces. So there's stuff out there.
So it's a good problem to have then.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, there is sort of this, you know, like a, mythology that, you know, we just, you know, the products we get, they just, we're not, you know, they're just not out there. It's like, we're always saying, look, if you want Ghostbusters, go to GameStop and Target. They have them, you know, and surely they do. Now, we don't have control once we ship it to distributors or retailers. We obviously don't have control of how we get on shelf. Like if we're at Hasbro, Mattel, you got more control because you got these giant retail teams and merchandising teams, and you know, they have 1,000 foot soldiers out there. They're able to help merchandise the products. Well, brands like us, little brands, you know, we don't have those sort of resources. So we, you know, we kind of have to do what everybody else does, is watch as, you know, store managers or clerks or, you know, people that stock shelves get stuff out from their storerooms or there's, you know, or from the DCs or whatever. Or distributors we ship to that, you know, they get things out. You know, sometimes things moving in, it's like a hockey puck moving in different directions sometimes. And, you know, there might be some of our stuff already on there. So there's got some of that has to sell through to get new stuff on there. We only have so much space at retail, you know. So could be a million different reasons. And, you know, some stuff we do is more boutique, so it just sells out quicker because we just don't make a lot of it, because, you know, the audience might not be there to make a lot of it, you know. So it's like we're not playing any games. We're kind of making to what we can, you know, is available for people to purchase, that we'll purchase it. So, you know, I would say the collectors are way smarter than we are, think way more granular through strategies than we do, but majority on some of what I get as far as feedback, but the majority of it is, yeah, we're making product. We make it what we feel is an appropriate amount of product. We get it to the distributors, we get to the retailers. At that point, it's kind of in their hands, you know. We wish we had more influence at that point, but if they get it up, maybe it sells out. Maybe it's, you know, collectors are territorial for the loyal subjects, where, you know, they stake out certain places. So, you know, they might sweep the shelves before other people do. But yeah, I mean, there is good stuff out there. It's kind of everywhere. I know there's people are asking, where's Hot Wheels? Well, Hot Wheels is at Target, and was at Target for a while, you know. I think the one that there has been a sort of limited distribution through is Egretsuko. That was probably the most elaborate, coolest series we've ever made. It has like, there's so many characters in the series. It's like head spinning. And, you know, that's, I think you get that on Amazon through Bandai America. Like you could grab it, you know, it's there. But if it's just about hunting at retail, you know, who knows? Maybe we're popular. Maybe the products are just not there. But we ship them, you know, we order them from the supplier and we make them, we ship them. So, you know, they got to be somewhere. They're not with us anymore. Now, it was like the best action was Walmart. Okay, so how's this go? Walmart goes 9/15, 9/15. That's the set date. That's the set date. You know, and so we feel a responsibility to move it because, you know, we want it to be a big line and we want to marshal the people that we know that will go out there and support it. So it happens. 9/15 shows up. There's no best action on the shelf. So people are like, well, where is it? We're like, well, we shipped it. You know, like, you know, a part of me showing up to 2,500 stores and actually grabbing it from the warehouse and putting it on shelf myself, I don't know what else to tell you. But we did, we have been sort of, you know, really close in talks with the group, the retail marketing group that is curating that space at Walmart. And they say it's on shelves, you know, it's stuff's on shelves right now and it's get and it just, Walmart's a beast. It just takes them a second.
So at Walmart, is this line going to be in the primary toy aisle or is it going to be more in like the electronics section, like the previous loyal subjects? Product
exactly. So electronics, you know, the evolution of that, I think electronics is sort of like, you know, the Radio Shack fries thing where it's there's not a lot of electronics out anymore, right? It's like you got a laptop, you got an iPhone, you got an iPad, that's your electronics.
Yeah.
So a lot of these stores went scrambling about, you know, how to fill those spaces, and you know, pop culture is really sort of it exploded. So pop culture merchandise, you know, I mean, you could see it by the amount of people that the increase in patronage at, you know, pre-COVID, obviously, at Disneyland and some of these theme parks. And obviously, you know, you're guaranteed to get what, at least 4 Marvel movies a year, 3 or 4. So it's, you could see where pop culture was heading in general. And there was a lot of merchandising solutions in and around these sort of tentpole, you know, Marvel movies or Disney, you know, IP. And so, you know, selling stuff that no longer sells because everything lives in the cloud and people have these sort of self-sustained, you know, technological sort of outfits in their homes. And, you know, there's not as much of these sort of oblong electronic devices and assortments and sort of varieties to buy anymore. So they did what they did. It's like, okay, well, we got to transfer electronics. It's funny that people know that it's in the electronics section, but it is. And so the electronics section is becoming the entertainment section, essentially. And so that's just a long explanation of why it's in electronics. Because electronics is going bye-bye. Well, entertainment is dominating pop culture. And then you're also getting the same thing in music. So like the Gene and Angus and Slash, that's really showing up in music.
Okay.
You know, so we're like, you know, it's unfortunate. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of music. You know, I've played it all my life and love, you know, Studer recording boards and 2-inch tape and live bands and all that stuff and records and... But it's gone, you know, nobody collects records anymore. And a lot of that stuff's gone. I know that there is some resurgence of vinyl, you know, so they do have like a little splash of that. And some of these kind of cool little record players, you know, that you see popping up here and there. But they're also looking for companies like Loyal Subjects to create solutions, pop culture solutions for music fans, you know, action figures being one of it. And I'm sure there's going to be some pins and, you know, coffee cups and cool memorabilia that music fans like. It's just not going to be CDs or you know, actual physical music anymore.
So now one of the things that you mentioned was, you know, a lot of the limited stuff. And this is kind of a question that I've always had. Club 28 is kind of the big limited thing for the action vinyls. What goes into deciding what's going to be a Club 28 action vinyl? Like, I know for the WWE ones, there was the ref. you know, what kind of makes it like, well, yeah, let's have it be the ref.
Just random, you know, like someone throw out, would a ref be cool? And I was like, yeah, that would actually be cool. That's it. I mean, that is the thought process. I know, you know, one of, I would say the more famous ones is this green He-Man one we did called Slime Pit He-Man. And, you know, apparently it sells for like thousands of dollars, but it's, honestly, it was just kind of looking through the lore and saying, what's a bit, we were doing so many different colorways because back then we were giving retailers their own colorways. Thank God we're not doing that anymore. We're making like 66 SKUs. We're basically, you know, blowing our wad on one wave. You know, it was unsustainable. It's ridiculous. But I think it's what helped establish the brand, actually, you know, of like going to Toys R Us and picking up Toys R Us He-Man and then Target He-Man and then, you know, Hot Topic He-Man and then Walmart He-Man. So I think it did help us. But as far as production complexities, it's just absolutely mind numbing, bending, you know, managing 66 SKUs. Think about a normal action figure company. You know, what do they manage? 7 SKUs tops?
So, if that.
Totally. So we were just going way out there, man. You know, part of it was, you know, kind of honoring the collectability and kind of giving chase. But I mean, we were running ourselves ragged, you know, really exhausting a lot of resources, making it so special and customized. So when we're getting down to, you know, some of the nitty gritty on this thing that we invented called Club 28, which has its own story of how it even came about. We were just looking, all right, we've done all the He-Mans. What's available? And it was just like, oh, what about the green slime pit one? We're like, okay, cool. It's Club 28. Let's do it.
So
that is about as far as that goes. And some of it is just like what has reduced complexity in deco? You know, is there, you know, can we cut it off from an existing tool? Because asking a factory it's set up to produce a million units of something to go, oh, by the way, will you make 28 of this? It's like going to a very fancy restaurant, telling the chef, you know, can you get a crumb of the bread, not leave a tip, walk out, and thanks for your nice bread. You know, it's an insane proposition. It'd be like going to printing, you know, a big card printing store and go, can I get 8 business cards?
Yeah.
What are they going to, they're going to look at you, you know, like you got a hole in your head. So we do these things that kind of buck traditional norms for manufacturing, and it probably piss off our suppliers quite a bit, actually. So in the case of He-Man, Slime Pit He-Man, he was just green. He was one shot. You do it in the sample room and be done with it. You know, it's like if it's really complex, it's, you know, we're giving the factory extra bottles of liquor for Chinese New Year. You know, thank you for doing these crazy things for us, and thank you for still being our partners, although we ask you to do crazy things.
Yeah, that's, I mean, but those little touches are what makes, you know, a company feel more transparent, more accessible. Like those little special touches throughout are awesome. Like it really is a nice touch.
Well, we certainly try to do our best in they are nearly impossible tasks to pull off, but I think we've pulled a few of them off. You know, it's, as I'm sure you guys are action figure enthusiasts, I'm pretty sure you guys would know that.
Yes.
You know,
it's,
yeah, for sure.
Not easy to make 20 or something.
Well, Jonathan, listen, thank you so much for joining us tonight and for, you know, and for coming on and talking about the loyal subjects.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Please plug where, so Best Action, the first two wave, the first wave should be out now, and the second wave has been announced, right?
Yeah, from here, from what I know, it's in stores and it's hitting stores right now. I'd definitely go out this week and check it. You know, there's a lot of stores that should have by then. So we have, you know, an anime selection, which is being followed up by entertainment selection. And so those SKUs are going to start sliding in on 10/15. About 2.5 weeks. And then on music is also hitting 10/15. That is in select Walmart stores. It's not as wide as what we're doing right now. We're in 2,500 stores with the Best Action lines for anime and entertainment. We're in select stores for the music stuff, but it does look like it's going to go wide if it does really gangbusters. So we have, if it does go wide, then it'll be mostly in your neighborhood Walmart. And then Hot Topic should have Best Action assortment about 10/15. Looks like Target's is getting into the game a little bit. That'll be in 2021. And then we are going to put some Best Action on our website in next 2 to 3 weeks. And that's thelittlesubjects.com. Follow us on Instagram. We're The Little Subjects. Follow us on Facebook. We're The Little Subjects Co. on Facebook. And we're bringing a lot of really cool stuff. And, you know, kind of surprising. We're having this growth spurt during COVID, which is, you know, trust me, I have the worst business instincts. I started the company, you know, in the 2008, you know, Great Recession. And grew it, and maybe I got good business instincts. And then here we are at COVID, and we're scaling this company out to be a beast. So, you know, definitely go and support, and we'll keep on making cool stuff.
Well, congratulations on all the growth. This product line is awesome. We can't wait.
It's really cool.
We cannot wait to get our hands on it.
Oh, dudes, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, there's a lot of love and care that went into this. And I know the creative teams worked extraordinarily hard. You know, I might just be the voice piece of the Well Subjects, but I have an incredible, incredible creative team. You know, their senior designers, absolutely a rock star. Lead sculptors, a rock star. And then the heroes of the day are the TLS China team, who just, you know, awe-inspiring. The amount of work and dedication and focus. It's absolutely awe-inspiring. So I might get too much credit for this because it truly is a giant, giant team effort.
Well, get out there and buy some figures, guys.
For sure.
Definitely do that.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.